Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I first of all would like to thank the Foundation for this invitation to speak here. This afternoon I'm speaking on behalf of the Council for Science and Technology, and I'll be reporting on aspects of our report published in March on vision for UK research. Now, this report makes many of the same points as the Royal Society report, the Scientific Century, and I think that's obviously a good thing. Well, it'd certainly be a bad thing if we said different things, of course. I will be sticking fairly often to the message of that report, but not always. Sometimes you'll get my own view about certain things. You'll tell that when I get rather enthusiastic and overexcited. I don't want to cover the whole report. I'm going to emphasise three main messages from the Vision report. The first is that scientific research is of great value to the United Kingdom. Science matters. The second is there should be a greater focus on people rather than projects for the highest quality research. The third point is we need to get better at translating research into social and economic value. So that are the three points I'm going to talk about this afternoon. First of all, the value of scientific research. And I want to start, actually, in discussing the attributes of science that make it the most effective and powerful process for improving knowledge of the world and of ourselves. I think it's very difficult to talk about scientific method. I think it's easier to think of attributes that define science. And by science, I should say I also include the social sciences, both science and the social sciences. They both respect reliable and reproducible data and observation. That's central. They emphasise the need for a consistent and coherent general view of the world. They generate ideas and theories capable of being tested and refuted. They encourage a healthy scepticism. No scientific dogma is so sacred that it cannot be attacked. And it recognises that at the borders of understanding, at the limits of research, knowledge is tentative and only becomes more certain as a consequence of the constant challenge and the constant testing that I've just described to you. And it is knowledge gained in this way that is reliable and gives us the power to change the world. You'll hear from Francis Bacon, you've already heard from him several times in my talk. Bacon said in 1597, "For also knowledge in itself is power. Knowledge can be used to change the world." So science, by providing this knowledge and power, is of great value to us for the creation of wealth, for the improvement of health, for enhancing the quality of life, for protecting the environment. And I would also add to that, in league with our colleagues in the humanities, for enriching our culture. I don't think this is really any longer in dispute. It's quite clear that countries like the United States that have heavily invested in science have done very, very well economically. We have already heard, and it's true, that particularly China, but also India too, have recognised this and are strongly investing in science and technology, as emphasised by the Dyson report and others. The UK must counter this, they must do the same. But to be effective, that investment must be done well. And the Council of Science and Technology recommends that there should be a great focus on people to drive science and its applications forward, especially at the discovery end of science. We need a culture that will find the best scientists, that will inspire them, educate them, and train them to engage in the scientific endeavour. We need to nurture homegrown talent, but we also need to identify it and import it from around the world. And we need to train them to the highest standards. Above all, we need to inspire them and then retain them. It's high-quality people that will identify the high-quality projects. Projects will come out of identifying the best people, and that will lead to the discovery of new knowledge and to new inventions. That training and support and inspiration has to be at all levels, from good education in schools, through our fine universities. They need to be encouraged. The PhD, the postdoctoral worker, to the research professor. The CST focused on two proposals looking at graduate students and postdoctoral workers and more senior investigators, research professors. We suggest that the PhD should be re-examined, maybe looking at the balance between a master's and the PhD, the master's being used, a master's in research, to keep a broad base in skills so that they are still able to engage in a wide variety of subsequent career paths, and then choosing from those the best graduate students who will actually take a research direction. This may lead to a smaller cohort, in fact, of PhD students, but of a high quality. We also propose that there should be established a highly prestigious national level scholarship scheme to support the very best PhD students recruited from the UK and from around the world, a scheme equivalent to the Rhodes Scholars. I'm pleased to say that we may hear about this from Adrian, I'm not sure, a little later, but this scheme has been welcomed, and a proposal for Newton scholarships is now being discussed. I think the point here is to actually identify a cohort of students who are the very best in the world, and who will therefore, the very best students within the world will be attracted to, and that's across the entire country. Equivalent ad hominem schemes should operate for more senior researchers as well, such as postdoctoral workers, but I personally feel it's very, very important to apply that to a new, highly prestigious research professorship scheme. I think that the UK could identify 100, 150 researchers of the highest level. They could be based on the Royal Society Research Professorship Scheme, covering all subjects, but also with direct grant support for their research. Such a scheme is not expensive, it would only cost a total of a few percent of the total budget, and if that budget is reorganised, it should cost no more than what we're presently spending. But it will send a signal, and we've heard about signals already from Martin, it would send a signal to the world that the UK is serious about science. If we could identify a very prestigious cohort at the national level that would be used to identify and support the best scientists, reviewing them every 5 or 7 years, I think that would be an extremely good message to send to the rest of the world. I'm talking about supporting individuals. I want to mention two characteristics that are very important for individuals. The first is that the best scientists are usually motivated by an extreme, almost pathological curiosity. The second is that they are usually highly sceptical. I'm going to quote Harry Menken. What he said about scientists is that what moves them is an unquenchable curiosity, a boundless, almost pathological thirst to penetrate the unknown, to uncover the secret, to find out what has not been found out before. It's a real characteristic of scientists, that curiosity. But they're also very sceptical. Back to Bacon again. If a man will begin with certainties, he shall end in doubts. But if he will be content to begin with doubts, he shall end in certainties. These are two important lessons, and I want to say why I think they are particularly important, because it leads to what for me is one of the biggest challenges in directing research funding, because most talented individuals are driven by this powerful curiosity, and they are very sceptical. They do not respond well to top-down direction about what they should do. However, society has its needs. It wants certain problems solved. We have a dilemma here. Society wants certain things done. Individual scientists are driven by their own curiosity. I think we need much more creative thinking about how we can best couple these two, what can be, conflicting situations. It isn't sufficient simply to ring-fence an area. You run the risk of attracting the mediocre if you do that. You have to somehow inspire our best scientists so their curiosity is driven by problems and issues of relevance to society itself. Finally, before I leave people and move to the last part of what I want to say, the best people need excellent infrastructure and excellent support, which is why the present challenges to university funding is, of course, so worrying. They also need to be very open to interdisciplinarity. It is often in the spaces between subjects where new innovation is to be found. The third point I want to emphasise is the need for the better translation of research into value. Now, I think sometimes in the UK, there's no doubt we can do it better, we sometimes beat ourselves up a bit too much about that. I've worked the last 7 years in the United States, and they worry a lot about it there too. They don't think they're doing it very well. There was a National Academy report, Rising Above the Gathering Storm, which it says exactly that. In fact, it is my view that no one really knows how to do it very well, and it would be best if we actually recognised that, because then we could even think about it creatively, about how we could do it better. I think it works better in the United States, in part because there's more money there in total, and in part because of the entrepreneurial nature of the business community, which is prepared to take risk and invest in risky ventures, something that may not be quite the case here. Also, we need to have a different time frame. It takes time to innovate well. Bacon, again, time is the greatest innovator. 1625, the same today. The stock market and investment community is often too short-term. It's driven by the imperative of the casino, and that is not conducive to true innovation. We need to emphasise on the long term if we're going to get true innovation, and less on marketing and less on short-term profit. How can we then achieve better translation? Well, this is a big problem. I'm going to emphasise only one point. I think we need to increase dramatically permeability between the academy and the applied sectors, both for-profit and not-for-profit applied sectors. There should be a much better flow of people at all stages between those two sectors, recognising, as David Sainsbury has said, and I see him sitting in the audience there, that we need an ecosystem of innovation. We need to recognise that we have to have a network, and we have to have permeability between the different sectors. We have to encourage public-private partnerships, which may encourage longer-term thinking, which I think is required for true innovation. I should also emphasise that this problem is difficult, and we have to think of new solutions. I'm involved in this new institute, the UK CMRI at St Pancras. It is wishes to look at these problems. It will be people-focused, recruiting the best, training them well, and providing high level of research support, but it will also experiment with innovation, which we absolutely require. It will also be permeable in the sectors, and that training will allow people trained there to be exported to the rest of the UK. I have one more point to say. Science is powerful. It has the power to do good. It also, of course, has the power to do bad. Scientists need to engage the public in dialogue about their research and the outcomes of their research. They have to earn their license to operate, which is from another very good report of about a decade ago from the House of Lords. For science to succeed, science must be comfortable with what scientists are doing, and that requires dialogue with the public. Well, the CST feels the UK has a real opportunity to lead the world there. I strongly believe that. I think it's an opportunity we simply just have to take. Thank you very much.